Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing a new refi fee and additional unemployment benefits rolling out.
Right, Joel, this is our Friday episode, and we have a lot of headlines we want to make sure that we cover, different stories that we came across this week. We're going to talk about how they affect our money, our personal finances. But I see here, man, you've got a note about Uber. You decided to start driving for Uber again?
No, although I don't know if I've ever mentioned on the podcast that I did one ride
for Lyft.
Yeah, you did
this one little promotion deal that they were doing, and you scored a ton of money.
$1,000 to do one ride for Lyft. Lyft had this crazy promotion one time where if you would sign up to be a driver and you got approved within a week and you gave just one ride, like they totally bungled the promotion, and they should not have
I think it was a mistake. Was it sort of like Citi? They just paid
the wire
The wire transfer. Like somebody hit the wrong button, and they just forked over like hundreds of millions of dollars.
Exactly.
They weren't supposed to.
They like almost immediately changed the terms.
Oh no!
You must give at least 40 rides, but I got in when it was just one ride, and so yeah, I gave one ride, one Lyft ride. I made basically $1,003 because the ride was super quick. But yeah, so that was fun. But I just got reminded the other night when I did, and I never take Uber and Lyft rides. Like it's almost never happens. But I mentioned a couple weeks ago that I came back from Memphis on a Southwest flight, and to get home, my Uber or Lyft ride cost half as much as my freaking flight. It was crazy. But I looked it up on Lyft, and I was like, man, I'm gonna hitchhike instead of this. That's ridiculous. It was like $34 to get home.
Ouch.
And then I was like, man, I need to check out Uber. Like I don't know. I think I just had been going to Lyft by default, and I ended up checking out Uber, and it was $12 cheaper.
What?
So I guess I just assumed that the way their algorithms worked, they were pretty much always consistently priced the same. But no, they're not. Like there's a vast disparity. And so before you book a ride, check both apps real quick before you press the button to get the car coming your way, so that you can make sure that you're not spending too much on the ride that's going to take you to wherever you need to get to go.
Yeah, man. Recently, I feel like Uber, they've kind of had their name dragged through the mud a little bit. You know, they've been involved
or through their entire company's history, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And because of that, I feel like more folks are taking Lyft. It's kind of seen as like maybe the slightly higher end view of ride sharing. I don't know. Maybe that's my personal opinion of it.
No, I think that's probably true.
Is that kind of where it is?
People assume it's better customer service. It's but
higher quality drivers, you know.
I don't know that that's the case, though. I think most drivers...
If you're looking to save $12,
yeah.
It's certainly worth checking another app. You know,
and most drivers that I've talked to, because I like to talk and I talk to drivers when I'm getting somewhere, many of them say that they drive for both and they interchange the apps. And so, yeah,
just
a lot of
on search pricing where the demand is.
Yeah, completely. So just a little word of the wise tip before you book a ride share, check both platforms.
You got to shop it a little bit.
Yeah, shop it around.
Like it's easy for us to fall into ruts. Actually, next week we're talking about paying for convenience and just the different charges and fees associated with that. But it's easy to pay more because we're creatures of habit.
True. All right. But before we get to our Friday flight, one final question for you on this topic, because I mentioned that I thought about hitchhiking. Have you ever hitchhiked, and is hitchhiking frugal or cheap?
Oh, man, that's such a difficult question because so much of it depends on the context, you know, like who are you with? Like what time of day is it? Where are you located? Like how many cars are driving down the road? So have I ever hitchhiked? I was about to say no, and I was buying myself time by like throwing out all those factors a second ago, but I just remembered that Kate and I guess technically hitchhiked at an Atlanta United game last year, and so we wanted to get down to this lower level, like in Atlanta it's called the Gulch, and it's where all the tailgating happens, it's where all the supporters clubs party, and we had ridden our bikes to the Benz where Atlanta plays their matches, and we were trying to meet some folks down below, but the easiest and most direct and fastest way to get down there was to go down this weird crazy ramp that only cars are allowed to go down, and there is an officer there keeping you from walking down there because there's no sidewalk and it's literally only like 10 feet wide. It can barely fit cars. And so I turned to Kate and I said, I'm not going to walk like a mile to get all the way around to go down the steps where you're supposed to go down. I was like, let's just see if we can hop in someone's car. Because cars are pulling down there to park.
It's like the shortest hitchhike of all time.
Yeah, yeah. So technically, was it a hitchhike? I think so. But yeah. We just kind of knocked on someone's window. We're like, hey, can we ride with you to get down there? And they kind of looked at each other like, yeah, sure.
This is pre-COVID.
Yeah, definitely pre-COVID.
When you're not freaked out by that.
But we jumped in the back of this little pickup truck. It was a four-door, so they didn't have to like get out and open their doors or anything. But it was a small pickup truck. And I will say, it did kind of freak us out because we jumped in and there were knives all over the floor. But they were like kitchen knives. And I don't know if they like sell those really sharp knives door-to-door
or something.
But they're chef's kitchen knives on the floorboards. And we saw that as we're climbing, and Kate and I kind of looked at each other, kind of freaked us out a little bit. Made me think of the beer commercial. Was it Bud Light with the chainsaw guy on the side of the road?
Yeah, so... Okay.
But he had a case of beer.
My hitchhiking experience.
Yeah, have you done it?
I have. I did it with like two of my buddies. And one of my buddies had like really long black hair at the time and like a beard. And it was right at the time when those Budweiser commercials had come out. And so he, like, out of cardboard, cut a chainsaw and a six-pack of Bud Light. And I think that, I don't know if that helped or hurt our chances of getting a ride, but we did get a couple of rides. I think we went from Portland to Seattle, if I remember correctly.
Oh, nice, dude. So that's, like, legit hitchhiking.
That was a real one, yeah.
I love it, dude. Well, I think in your case, you had three friends, and so there's certainly power in numbers. But, yeah, you just never know, man. There's a bunch of weirdos out there, and you don't necessarily want to get picked up by the wrong person.
That's true. I guess I was banking on the fact that we were the biggest weirdos in that situation.
Exactly. But when you're the biggest weirdo, when you are the largest risk, then, oh, yeah, try to hitchhike with whoever you can.
Exactly.
If you can make it happen.
All right, let's get on to the Friday flight,
Matt.
Let's do it. And, yeah, I'm interested to hear if any of our listeners are into hitchhiking or have ever done it. But
it's got to be some good stories out there.
Got to be some good ones. But all right, so let's get on to the stories that we found interesting this week. The first one, our friend Len Penzo, he has a personal finance blog, and every year he does this brown bag lunch survey, and his 12th annual survey just came out. And so, yeah, I love his cost analysis that he runs on the 10 most popular sandwiches to figure out which is the most affordable brown bag lunch. And not surprisingly, Matt, the bologna sandwich came in first. It was the most affordable sandwich that he tested at only 34 cents a sandwich.
I think he said it's been the most affordable for 8 years running. Like only like a couple times did PB&J kind of, you know, surpass it in the number one spot. But it's also worth mentioning too that, I mean, this is kind of like a fun thing. It's not like he's necessarily like sitting down and making like scientifically equal sandwiches. He's just making normal sandwiches and figuring out how much it costs just to give folks a frame of reference.
I appreciate it that he's doing this legwork, because this is the kind of stuff that normal people need to know, right?
Yeah.
But I guess the big question is, who actually really wants to eat a bologna sandwich, right?
Dude, I hated bologna sandwiches as a kid, and I hate them now. You know, like, I would much rather, I mean, I just mentioned PB&J. I love PB&J in particular. Like, you toast it and kind of get that PB&J on a toasted sandwich. Oh, so good, dude.
There you go, a little crunch.
I love it. And also, too, one of the other ones he had on there was an egg salad sandwich. Like, I would personally much rather enjoy that, you know? It does cost more, but even still, it's only at 71 cents per sandwich. Plus, I got to think that eggs are going to be way better for you, way more nutritious than bologna. You can even splurge a little bit and go for a delicious BLT, where the cost comes in at $2.86 per sandwich, which is way expensive. But even still, man, you know, that's still over $1 less than the cost of a Big Mac. Bottom line, you can have massive savings if you can avoid going out to eat for lunch, which I think fewer folks are doing anyway these days because of COVID. More of us are working from home, and I think more of us are making our own sandwiches too. So.
Yeah, for sure. And I pretty much still stick to my cheap lunch of carrots, apples, and almonds almost every day, man.
You still got
to
jump on that. You got to jump on that leftover train, dude. Like, leftovers.
I do sometimes, but
it's all just, leftovers are the best.
Like, especially if you're going into an office environment, the leftover,
I get that.
You might offend some of your coworkers or something by heating it up and eating it in your, I don't know.
Forget that, man. I'll totally show up with a bunch of curry, nuke it in the microwave, and then after that, burn some popcorn while I'm at it.
Yeah, you would. You're that kind of guy.
I never did that, by the way, when I worked in the office.
All right, let's get on to the next story. So there's evidence that traditional one-year leases are actually on the decline right now. That's because people are looking for shorter term leases, and they're looking for more flexibility in their living situation, especially because of the economic uncertainty and the potential inability for people to be able to pay for rent. They're looking for less stringent lease terms, which makes a whole lot of sense. And Matt, we're both landlords, and I've had a couple instances where tenants have had to request greater flexibility in payments. And in some cases, I've essentially foregone the lease and allowed tenants to go month to month. It'll be interesting to see too, though, if corporate landlords kind of follow the same suit. I think mom and pop landlords have a little more flexibility with what they're able to offer people. And often to make it in the business as a mom and pop landlord, you have to be more flexible. So it'll be interesting to see if these corporate landlords, the bigger apartment complexes, are going to offer some of those same flexible terms to tenants right now.
Yeah, I think a good argument could be made that corporate landlords might be more able to, but just less willing.
You know, that's
I think
a good point.
Mom and pop landlords might be just as able to, or maybe honestly even less able, because a lot of individual landlords kind of count on that income to provide for their families.
To pay for their mortgage.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's me. And so a large part of it is that I think a lot of times we're just more willing to. We don't have like that corporate shield where we're focused on profits and, you know, sticking it to our renters.
Yeah, there's an actual relationship there too.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, and so, you know, the good news here though is that from a renter or a possible tenant's point of view is that you might be able to score a lease renewal at an amount that's lower than what you are currently paying. And I think this is especially true if you live in an apartment with a corporate landlord, you know, and you're seeing your same unit maybe listed for less. You know, if your lease renewal is coming up soon, you have a pretty good argument to negotiate down what you pay, you know, or maybe even get a month for free if you are going to re-sign. Or maybe you might even be able to go month to month. Just know that if you don't have a lease in place, though, that your rent can go up with very little notice. So just know the market, and we would encourage you to ask for better terms if you are in a position like that.
Yeah. All right, Matt. So since we're on the note of housing, let's get to something else. This one is specifically for people who own a home and are looking to refinance right now. If you've been planning on refinancing your home, like so many people have recently and so many people are thinking about doing as rates have ticked down to just insanely low levels, well, make sure you do it before September, because Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are charging a new fee for anybody doing a refinance. Starting next month, a 0.5% fee will be added to refis, as Fannie and Freddie are looking to make up for some of the increased risk of defaults and foreclosures due to the pandemic. And since Fannie and Freddie back about half of the mortgages in the U.S., this fee is likely to affect a lot of individuals, and especially when we're in the midst of a refi boom, you know, this extra 0.5% cost could add just a major barrier to people in regards to refinancing and whether it still makes sense or not.
Yeah, that's true, man. And, you know, it's worth noting, too, that the way that this additional fee works is that Fannie and Freddie, that they are charging the banks this fee, not us as homeowners directly. And also, it only applies to refis, not purchases, so home buyers don't have to worry about this. However, given the huge demand, like you just mentioned, Joel, in refinancing lately, you know, due to these super low rates, like those banks are likely going to pass that fee along to consumers. There's no reason for them necessarily to just absorb that cost when they have way more refinances than they can even currently process. I see it as a simple illustration of supply and demand. But even still, even with the fee, a refi these days is likely to still be a great move for a lot of folks, especially if they have an interest rate that might be like a point higher than what they can currently get now. In my mind, that's a good time to seriously consider it.
Yeah, for sure. But fees suck. I hate paying fees.
Yeah.
And when I see headlines that a new fee is being instituted, I'm like, man, is there a way around that? Can we like not have that fee? Because fees are just the worst. And I understand that Fannie and Freddie are trying to essentially protect themselves against potential future losses, but I don't know. It's a crummy way to do it.
It's just poor timing too. You know, like a lot of folks are just going through a lot right now, and a lot of folks are looking to refi to bolster their financial position.
Save money every month on their mortgage.
Yeah. And so for them to then get stuck with this additional fee in the midst of all that, it's just kind of poor timing.
Yeah, for sure. All right. And regardless of when you're looking to refi, like you always want to make sure you shop with a few lenders to make sure that you're getting the best rate possible. Another way to get the best rate is to make sure that your credit score is in tip-top shape. And credit scores, we've talked about them from time to time on the show. They're shrouded in a little bit of mystery. So remember that 35% of your score is based on your payment history. So that's why making payments on time or early is crucial to you getting the best rate, to you having the best credit score. Another 30% of that credit score is based on credit utilization, which is a fancy way of saying the amount of credit that you're using compared to what you have available. So for example, if you've got a credit card with a limit of $10,000, you want to keep your balance low, ideally around $2,000 or less. If you do well on both of those factors, chances are your credit score is going to be rock solid and you will qualify for the best rates.
Yeah, so that's what makes up the bulk of your credit score. The remaining 35% is determined by a few items like your credit history. So, you know, that's why we want you to keep old accounts open if possible. I feel like we actually recently answered that question on a recent Ask HTM episode. So, you know, don't close those credit cards from college if you can afford to keep those around. And your credit mix, that's another factor. So it actually helps some if you have installment loans like student loans, as well as revolving credit like credit cards. And then finally, what's last here is new credit accounts. So don't open a new credit card if you're looking to refi or apply for a mortgage anytime soon, if you're wanting to get the best rate.
All right, Matt, we've got more to get to, including how the rollout of kind of the newest wave of unemployment benefits, federal unemployment benefits, is working for people. We'll get to that right after this break, during which I'm going to eat a 34-cent bologna sandwich.
Thank you.
Joel. We're back from the break. And you know what? You probably could have actually eaten a bologna sandwich in a minute.
Then I'd have a tummy ache, though.
Yeah, well, there's no substance there. Like, that's the thing with bologna. It's just processed meat, just full of just who knows what. Dude, I really don't like bologna. I can't believe you're all about it.
I wonder if Len was getting the organic bologna, too.
Yeah, no way. There's no way. So before we talk about the unemployment benefit news, let's talk about cars, too, man. I recently saw that the average price of a new car is exploding, dude. You know, we just talked about ditching a car earlier this week, yet many people are buying new and are spending an average of over $35,000 when they make that purchase. New cars aren't necessarily evil. Joel, you even wrote a post on this up on our site about when a new car might make the most sense for you. But, you know, as the average price of a new car skyrockets, the average length of a car loan is also getting longer. And that can really be a recipe for personal finance issues to pop up in your life. You don't want to end up in a situation where you just owe way more money on a vehicle than it's actually worth.
Yeah, so we would suggest thinking twice before you start shopping for a new car. Could a used one work just as well for you? And if you do decide that you really want a brand new car, that's okay too, right? But look for more affordable models that aren't going to stretch your budget too hard. If you can pay in cash, that's great. But if you do need to take out a loan, we suggest not buying a car that you can't afford to pay off in 3 years. 36 months should be the longest length of a loan that you should be considering. If you choose a longer loan than that, you just can't afford that car.
Or like you said, Joel, you can just stick with cash. Keep it nice and clean.
It's ideal. Yeah. That's for sure.
Let's talk a little bit about student loans, dude. Since the executive order a couple weeks ago, more details have come to light on relief for student loan borrowers. It now seems very likely that the suspension of student loan payments and interest accrual is now set to last through till the end of the year. That's because the education secretary has, quote unquote, broad authority to act on something like this, according to the White House. And then plus, too, you know, the continued suspension of student loan payments, it seems to have bipartisan support, so it's not likely to be challenged. There's a good chance that this is actually going to happen.
I'm trying to think of something that I have broad authority in life. I can't think of anything right now.
Your own life, your ability to eat leftovers to not throw food away in the trash.
That's a good point. All right. keep in mind that this expected relief is not available to those with private student loans.
Right.
And this is specifically for borrowers who have federal student loans, which make up about 90% of loans out there. So that's good to know. And if you have a Stafford, a Grad Plus, a Parent Plus, and consolidation loans, all of those loans, we're talking to you. And this relief should be automatic too, just like it was in the first round under the CARES Act. So you shouldn't have to do anything in order to not have to pay on your student loan through the end of the year while also not accruing any interest, which is great. We'll keep you posted though as more details come together from the education department. Sometimes they can be a little slow moving, just like they were in the implementation of the CARES Act. But this is good news for student loan borrowers, and it's just more of a chance for people to get to save what they would have had to pay on these loans. But at the same time, there's just no downside because interest isn't accruing right now.
Yeah, and not only are folks saving money too, but a lot of individuals are just really getting after their debts, right? You know, this postpones your student loan payments, but it doesn't cancel it. Like, you still have to owe money. Like, you still are going to owe those student loans. And so the ability to kind of really go after it when there's no interest being accrued is fantastic. It also buys you a little more time as well to even just kind of go after some of the higher rate interest debt that you might have, right? Like, I'm thinking of just high interest rate credit cards that you might have sitting around. Go after those instead, because this is a great time to knock out some of that debt if you're in a solid spot with your personal finances.
Yeah, if your income has remained steady and yet you've got these student loans that you don't have to pay on right now, but you have other debts in your life that have higher interest rates, tackle those now. That's a good way to go. All right. Another aspect of the executive orders that were issued almost 2 weeks ago, it was an extension of unemployment benefits. And it was originally announced as like this boost of $400 a week. But in reality, it looks like it's going to be more like $300 a week as states were basically being asked to foot the remaining $100. But most states just can't afford that right now. And either way, this is a massive decrease, right? It's a halving of the extra $600 that a lot of folks were seeing with the CARES Act. But as Congress was essentially unable to come to any sort of a compromise, it's certainly better than just a complete removal of any sort of federal aid when it comes to additional unemployment altogether.
Yeah. At the time of this recording, Joel, 11 states are now offering the extra $300. And so individuals could see those additional funds as early as this week. But FEMA is expecting to be able to pay out that assistance by the end of the month on average, but it could take longer. And that's because if you were listening closely, you heard me say FEMA, which is the Federal Emergency Management Agency. and they normally respond to like natural disasters and stuff. They've been tasked with administering this relief, and officials are having to roll out a new system to work with the existing unemployment system. It might not be the smoothest rollout, and so, you know, there might be a chance of delays, even though we are seeing more states kind of get approved and get logged onto the system, so to speak, pretty quickly.
Yeah, so all that to say, really, like, don't bank on receiving that extra unemployment relief in a timely manner. Man, I still know people that are waiting on thousands upon thousands of dollars in unemployment relief from the CARES Act that they haven't been able to get. Some people waiting on almost $20,000 of money from the government. Yeah, it's not cool. And so, yeah, on that note, if you followed kind of how things went the first time and how things are still going with those additional unemployment benefits, you'll know what we're talking about. It didn't go well. A lot of people were left in the lurch, and there are still hopes that Congress will come together and we'll pass a bill that will provide a little more long-lasting additional unemployment assistance. We hope to see that, and we'll definitely talk about it on the show if it happens. But now more than ever, it's just this great time to fire up a side hustle, start sending emails and making calls to people in your network in order to look for a new job, right? I think it's time for a lot of people to look for longer term solutions to employment, even as many industries have been hit hard and individuals have been laid off, right? This past Monday, Matt, we had an interview with Jaspreet Singh of Minority Mindset, and we talked about entrepreneurship. Give it a listen if you haven't, because I think it was inspirational. Jaspreet had this conventional path essentially laid before him, and he decided to go in a completely different route. And he basically started things from scratch and built businesses out of nothing. And is that the sort of thing that's easy? No. But is it the sort of thing that's replicable? Yes, I think so. So yeah, I thought that was a really fun conversation with him. And man, I gleaned a lot of stuff from that chat.
Yeah, and on the note of work, you know, the job market is changing right now in a pretty meaningful way. Like, working from home, it's no longer a trend, but it's becoming more and more a long-term reality for us. And many businesses are prioritizing full-time jobs less, and they're focusing on more contract work as they begin to list jobs and hire for needs. Much of this is due to economic uncertainty. So it's great to see that hiring is up and job listings are increasing. But, you know, contract work doesn't necessarily provide some of the important benefits that many workers are looking for.
Yeah, benefits, healthcare in particular, have, of course, become just like this incredibly meaningful thing that goes along with employment. But with the economy changing, and, you know, we've already seen this kind of trend towards gig work, and we're seeing contract work become more and more common. Many people who are getting a new job might not have the benefits that they had before. So even while many are thrilled to be getting some work after potentially being laid off earlier this year, there's still other difficulties associated with that. So it's important to note that that is going to be a lot of what you'll see if you are job hunting right now. And if you do take a job offer in the coming weeks or months, it's okay to keep looking and applying elsewhere, you know, when you do accept some contract work. So you can look for the job that is eventually going to be an even much better fit for you and your family, in particular, giving you some of those benefits that are just so important and helpful.
And one final note, one final story we wanted to mention, man, is that the S&P 500 hits a record high this week. It is crazy to think about what has happened in the stock market these past 6 months. And it's important to note that when the market hits an all-time high, it brings out a lot of naysayers, you know, who believe that this can't continue. You know, will the market go up at this rate forever? Like, no way, that's not going to happen. But, you know, does this week's news ensure that, you know, we're going to see a big decline in stock valuations in the immediate future? That's also going to be a no. That's why we invest consistently and for the long term, because, you know, who knows what the market will do in the near term. It's good to see optimism from investors, but, you know, don't allow that news to change how it is that you invest. Just keep up and continue that slow and steady investing approach.
Yeah, I think it's easy to get sucked into headlines right now, especially as you see record high headlines, and everybody's got a response to something like that, right? They've got their take on what's going to happen next, and those takes are typically all across the board, and it's easy to buy into one or the other. I got to say, I have no idea, you know, where the stock market's going from here, and neither do those people. And so, yeah, the best thing we can do is stay the course, continue doing what we're doing, dollar cost averaging, investing on the reg every single week or every single month, like you've been doing, to build wealth for the long haul. That's how you do it, not by reading the headlines and responding to those. All right, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. For listeners that want to check out the show notes for this episode, including a link to that brown bag lunch survey, we'll have the show notes up on our website at howtomoney.com.
And maybe this weekend you're going to be hanging out with some friends, or maybe, you know, you've got some pandemic pals, like some families or individuals who you've kind of quarantined with. We would appreciate if you haven't already told them about our show, that you would mention How to Money. You know, we appreciate all of our listeners, and we're always looking for ways to get what it is that we're talking about, personal finances, in front of new folks who need that financial encouragement. So thank you in advance. Joel, that's going to be it, buddy. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.